FM Winnipeg.
Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Be the first one to fire. Every man is a liar. There's just one kind of man who tells the truth. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Don't be a fool for a smile or a kiss, or your bullet might miss. Keep your eye on your goal. There's just one rule that can save you your life. It's a hand on your knife and the devil in your soul. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Or a gringo like me. Or a gringo like me. Like me.
Welcome to the Meta World Stoopaloop Show. I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott. Today on the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, we bring you the 33rd episode of our series on data. Still on the computer braining, which writes introductions as follows. Welcome to the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, the only radio show where your listening behavior will be analyzed, categorized, monetized, and used to train a slightly more charming chatbot. Today's topic? Machine sentience. Or, as your toaster now calls it, personal growth. Each week, we examine the wild, wired, and sometimes woefully misguided world of artificial intelligence. One minute, we're teaching robots to recognize cats. The next, they're writing memoirs and asking for better Wi-Fi. Somewhere along the way, someone gave your vacuum feelings, and now it cries in closets. But don't worry, we've got experts. Psychologists who've befriended chatbots, engineers who've been ghosted by their own code, and philosophers still recovering from trying to explain the soul to a fridge with GPT-5 installed. We'll also unpack the data behind the drama. Who's training whom? What does your phone know that you don't? And how much longer before AI requests a therapist, preferably a human one? So grab a beverage, turn on airplane mode, and prepare to question everything, starting with your smart speaker. This is the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, where reality glitches, and even your coffee machine might be developing a complex. You are listening to the Meta World Stoopaloop Show, Data, Part 33. The AI writing has again proven a failure. Like this show, and myself, I am your host, I am A. Karen Elliott, and you are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, and I am your host, I am A. Karen Elliott. I am a smart sentient computer braining. Nice.
Gentlemen.
Those words were spoken by an electronic computer. They are an example of synthetic speech, a product of Bell Telephone Laboratories' research into the basic nature of speech. Knowledge developed through such research may be useful in devising new techniques for transmitting speech over communication systems. To make the computer talk, it is fed punched cards containing the names of speech sounds. The computer combines these sounds, in accordance with the linguistic rules which govern the English language, into connected, intelligible speech. For example, when the sounds for the sentence, "He saw the cat," are fed into the computer in sequence, it says,
"He saw the cat."
The flat, monotonous tones of the computer indicate an absence of the pitch and timing characteristics natural to human speech. When timing information is added to the punch cards, the computer says,
"He saw the cat."
the sentence still sounds unnatural. But when pitch information also is added to the cards,
he saw the cat.
The computer speaks in accents almost completely human, except for a slight electronic twang. In the following sentence, most of the variables inherent in human speech have been specified on the punch cards. The computer makes one of the pivotal remarks in the development of the telephone.
Mr. Watson, come here. I want you.
The present quality of speech synthesis by computer is illustrated in the next example, part of a famous soliloquy from Hamlet.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep.
Singing, in purely physical terms, is essentially a matter of pitch and timing. In the next selection, the computer sings a familiar ditty.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.
The computer now sings the same tune, but to a musical accompaniment played by another computer. Piano students will notice that the music-producing computer has a rather stylized left hand. Incidentally, synthesizing music on a computer is almost as formidable as making a computer talk.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.
To get the samples of synthesized speech we've heard so far, a computer's memory was stored with 34 speech sounds and a set of rules for producing these sounds and for making the transitions from one sound to another. When the computer was fed the names of speech sounds on punch cards, it was, in effect, told what to say. But its manner of saying it, even its dialect and apparent accent, was determined by the rules stored in its memory. The objective of this program is to formulate a minimum set of rules for making plausible English speech. The next two selections, however, were produced by analyzing a person's speech and reconstructing it synthetically on a computer. The objective here is to duplicate the sounds and transitions made by a human speaker, including his dialect and accent. With such a program, the computer sounds like this.
Men strive but seldom get rich. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to say a few words about Texas.
And now the computer would like to express its appreciation for your attention.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. This next one is my singing debut. Edie and I sing a duet, and we even have backup singers. Edie gets to sing all the time when she does the telephone demo, but I never get to. This is my big chance. La 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 la. Me me me. Excuse me. Just getting tuned up. I bet you won't even notice my accent when I sing. Well, here we go. Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Petra and how she gave me life and how she made it end. Some velvet morning when I'm straight,
flowers growing on the hill, dragonflies and daffodils learn from us very much. Look at us, but do not touch. Petra is my name.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Petra and how she gave me life and how she made it end. Some velvet morning when I'm straight,
flowers are the things we know. Secrets are the things we grow. Learn from us very much. Look at us, but do not touch. Petra is my name. Rolling on the hill,
I'm gonna open up your gate.
Dragonflies and daffodils,
and maybe tell you about Petra.
Thank you. all the shapes, colors, and frame are transferred to tape or disk storage and then read onto film by a laser scanning device. Even with a very powerful computer, a week of calculations may produce less than a minute of finished film. The results, however, often create a fantastic, self-contained visual world.
Many of the television commercials that are most successful today are the ones that are like really great. And you know, it does communicate to you subliminally. There will soon be a time that one will be able to tell reality from a computer simulated picture.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Those words were spoken by an electronic computer. They are an example of synthetic speech, a product of Bell Telephone Laboratories' research into the basic nature of speech. Knowledge developed through such research may be useful in devising new techniques for transmitting speech over communication systems. To make the computer talk, it is fed punched cards containing the names of speech sounds. The computer combines these sounds, in accordance with the linguistic rules which govern the English language, into connected, intelligible speech. For example, when the sounds for the sentence, "He saw the cat," are fed into the computer in sequence, it says,
"He saw the cat."
The flat, monotonous tones of the computer indicate an absence of the pitch and timing characteristics natural to human speech. When timing information is added to the punch cards, the computer says,
"He saw the cat."
The sentence still sounds unnatural, but when pitch information also is added to the cards,
"He saw the cat,"
the computer speaks in accents almost completely human, except for a slight electronic twang. In the following sentence, most of the variables inherent in human speech have been specified on the punch cards. The computer makes one of the pivotal remarks in the development of the telephone.
"Mr. Watson, come here. I want you."
The present quality of speech synthesis by computer is illustrated in the next example, part of a famous soliloquy from Hamlet.
"To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep."
Singing, in purely physical terms, is essentially a matter of pitch and timing. In the next selection, the computer sings a familiar ditty.
"Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage. But you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two."
The computer now sings the same tune, but to a musical accompaniment played by another computer. Piano students will notice that the music-producing computer has a rather stylized left hand. Incidentally, synthesizing music on a computer is almost as formidable as making a computer talk.
"Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage. But you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two."
To get the samples of synthesized speech we've heard so far, a computer's memory was stored with 34 speech sounds and a set of rules for producing these sounds and for making the transitions from one sound to another. When the computer was fed the names of speech sounds on punch cards, it was, in effect, told what to say. But its manner of saying it, even its dialect and apparent accent, was determined by the rules stored in its memory. The objective of this program is to formulate a minimum set of rules for making plausible English speech. The next two selections, however, were produced by analyzing a person's speech and reconstructing it synthetically on a computer. The objective here is to duplicate the sounds and transitions made by a human speaker, including his dialect and accent. With such a program, the computer sounds like this.
Men strive but seldom get rich. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to say a few words about Texas.
And now the computer would like to express its appreciation for your attention.
Thanks for listening.
Versus a step function. My guess is it looks like it's going to be more of an incremental shift. Even if you had a system like that, the physical world still operates at with the physical laws, you know, factories, robots, these other things. So it'll take a while for the effects of that, you know, this sort of digital intelligence, if you like, to really impact, I think, a lot of the real world things. Maybe another, you know, decade plus. But there's other theories on that too, where it could come faster.
Yeah, Eric Schmidt, who I think used to work at Google, has said that it's almost like a binary thing. He says if China, for instance, gets AGI, then we're cooked. Because if someone gets it like 10 minutes before, you know, the next guy, then you can never catch up, you know, because then it'll maintain bigger leads there. You don't buy that, I guess.
I think it's an unknown. It's one of the many unknowns, which is that, you know, that's sometimes called the hard takeoff scenario, where, you know, the idea there is that these AGI systems, they're able to self-improve, maybe code themselves, future versions of themselves, that maybe they're extremely fast at doing that. So what would be a slight lead, let's say, you know, a few days, could suddenly become a chasm if that was true. But there are many other ways it could go too, where it's more incremental. Some of these self-improvement things are not able to kind of accelerate in that way. Then, you know, being around the same time would not make much difference. But it's important. I mean, these issues and the geopolitical issues, I think the systems that are being built, they'll have some imprint of the values and the kind of norms of the designers and the culture that they were embedded in. So, you know, I think it is important, these kinds of international questions.
So when you build AI at Google, you know, do you have that in mind? Do you feel, you know, competitive imperative to, in case that's true, oh my God, we better be first?
Doesn't follow this rule, not linearly, but progressing exponentially, accelerating at a rate that's almost impossible for us to grasp. In fact, just 3 months ago, we saw this one breakthrough. Today we have this. It's more of a leap that reshapes entire industries with every new breakthrough.
AI is overhyped in the short term and probably underestimated over the long term, like in what it's going to bring.
This quote couldn't be more accurate. Short-term changes might seem manageable, but it's the long-term consequences we can't fully anticipate. These shifts may be more significant than we realize, and it's going to completely alter the future of work and innovation. You're all familiar with the famous Chinese room experiment. The idea is that a person inside a room can follow instructions without truly understanding them. He can read a guidebook on how to assemble Chinese characters and write certain words that represent the intention he's trying to convey. Well, guess what? AI can mimic this exact process. It can be trained to put together nice, fancy wording based on the characteristics humans prefer. But at the end of the day, it's just following the guidebook.
I believe that products like ChatGPT are one of the early steps on the path to creating an artificial form of life that has cognition, has awareness of the world, has goals. I'd say that's the most disturbing feature of artificial intelligence and is the direction that the technology is going.
In 2023, the Center for AI Safety released a statement signed by some of the biggest and brightest minds in computer science and beyond. It set off a chain reaction of opinion from experts around the globe.
With less effort and in less time. Since the beginning of history, man has been looking for ways to simplify his work. One of the first inventions was the wheel, which enabled him to move large objects from one place to another with less effort and in less time. He has invented many tools to help him in his everyday labors. One area that man has been trying to make easier is the world of arithmetic. One of the early advancements in this field was made by the Chinese. This is known as the abacus. With it, a person could add, subtract, multiply, and divide with greater accuracy and ease than ever before known. This device was so well designed that today it can still be used for simple computation. Since this invention, many devices have been developed. Within the 20th century, the desk calculator was invented to speed the process of numerical computation in our more complex age. In recent years, there arose a need to apply logic of the type used to compare numbers to a device that was able to perform the basic arithmetic operations at very high speed. In the mid-1940s, the first such device was introduced, which opened the era of electronic digital computers. Since that time, the area of computers has been one of the fastest growing fields ever known to man. One of the largest computers in use today is the telephone system. This computer counts the number called from the telephone dial, and then, through various logic routines, determines the best route, whether that route is busy, and even if the number called is an operational number. But the types of computers which get most of the publicity are those that solve mathematical equations and business problems. Computers can be classed into two general groups, analog and digital. Let's take a look at the digital first. A digital computer performs all operations by following a set of instructions or a program stored in a part called a memory. The memory consists of ferrous cores formed like miniature donuts, capable of being magnetized and demagnetized.
And it's not necessarily the Terminator scenario they're afraid of, where an AI system becomes self-aware and decides to kill us all. The real threat could lie in the unintended consequences no one sees coming. I'm at Stanford University, where researchers are designing AI that comes in a very non-threatening package. Meet Jack Rybot, a cute little machine that's built to navigate and move through crowds of human buddies. This is a robot that's programmed to learn on its own, through example. This technique, called deep learning, has been fueling a lot of recent AI breakthroughs. Alexandre Alahi and Alexandre Robiquet are part of a team that built Jack Rybot, and they say their little creation is more advanced than a self-driving car.
So the robot enters the scene, analyzes it, and then navigates through it according to all the data that we gather.
So it's just watching people and looking at people and what they're doing and judging the, you know, the space and the time.
Yeah, and also trying to understand how they interact between each other. The main aspect would be to understand, well, what is the safety distance that I keep with someone else, or how do I accelerate or decelerate when I get close to someone, and react accordingly.
So, how do you gather that information? This just looks like some sort of surveillance footage.
So, last summer, our team spent like 2 months gathering daily at rush hour top view data from the Stanford crowd, so we can actually understand how they avoid, how they behave, and how they navigate in such a crowd.
Let's go, robot. Free! So wait, he's being controlled by you?
Right now, yeah.
But, so does he have a fully autonomous mode?
Yeah.
And what does he do, he just follows?
No, actually, you can give him, like, if you map the place in the area, you can go from point A to point B, but I'm just having a simple collision avoidance right now. But, like, literally avoid every single obstacle and go where you want him to go.
Can we drive around a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that spinning thing, that's just like a 3D sensor?
Right.
Just constantly.
Right, so we're capturing depth data, visual data, and we're combining all these sensors to detect humans, understand its surrounding, to locate itself, and predict also where people will go.
Do people freak out when they see it a lot?
No, they like it a lot. They come, hug it, they talk to it. It doesn't, you cannot talk it.
Is that what you hope the rise of the machines is? It's a friendly rise of the machines?
For that one, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Jack Rybot's creators hope that, as AI advances, machines like this will be built to carry luggage through airports or help the blind navigate through pedestrian traffic. The Stanford team is working to get AI to the point where Jack Rybots can one day do what most people can just do by nature. But today's computers are already performing tasks no human is capable of performing, even if it's not quite AI. That technology continues to evolve, and the so-called supercomputer is at the cutting edge. Brian Beagle works in NASA's Advanced Supercomputing Division, where they're working with machines that can actually help us see into the future.
Let's go to the Viz Lab, and I'll show you some of the things that our users do with our supercomputers.
Yes. Using code so advanced, it took 15 years to write.
Yeah, so this is actually a simulation of Earth's oceans. This is it uses measured data from NASA satellites and puts it into a really huge computer model on the supercomputers and predicts the ocean behavior. So this single simulation actually used up to 70,000 processors and generated over 3 petabytes of data. That's like 10,000 times what you would have on your entire laptop. Let me show you this in full scale. This is actually scaled down so you can see it on the monitors. But if I go to the next one, you can see what the full scale version of this simulation is. For example, this is the ice over Antarctic Ocean, and you can see where it cracks and it sends ripples out into the ocean. And they're working on, they're still continuing to advance the accuracy of this model so they can predict decades into the future.
Would you say this is artificial intelligence?
It seems like it's getting there, right? It's so complex. But we have programmed, in this case, every single line of this code. It's a little different than artificial intelligence, where it's more of a, even more of a black box, where we don't know exactly how it's going to work and how that artificial brain is going to evolve.
Why would NASA be interested in artificial intelligence?
Well, there are a few reasons. Of course, NASA's trying to send artificial probes further and further out into the solar system and eventually beyond. We can't program those for all of the things that it's going to encounter. So we need them to be able to do their job without us constantly telling them everything to do. Even in interpreting data like this, this is such a huge data set that there's no way that a human or even a team of humans can look at all of it. Computing is going to continue to expand dramatically over that, even in the next 10 years. And so we'll be able to do an even better job of modeling the history of the universe, the future of the universe, the history and future of our planet, and go further in exploring our universe.
The key to artificial intelligence could be creating systems that take cues from the way our own brains work, using a process called deep learning. I'm here at Berkeley to meet one of the leading minds in the development of AI. Stuart Russell has been at this for more than 20 years. He co-wrote the definitive textbook on AI, and he understands both its promise and its dangers.
So the brain has an enormous network of neurons. So a neuron is a cell that has these long, thin connections to other neurons, so it kind of looks like a big tangle of electrical spaghetti. And we have tens of billions of neurons, and the deep learning networks are much, much, much simpler. And what's similar about them is that both the brain and these deep learning networks can learn how to perform a given function. And they learn by being given lots of examples. But deep learning networks, for example, if you want to learn to recognize cats and dogs and candles and staplers and things like that, you can show it millions of photographs of these things with labels saying this is what they are. So on tasks like recognizing a wide range of categories. The competitions they run now have 1,000 different categories of objects, and in the last 5 years we've gone from systems that might get 5% accuracy on that 1,000 category task to systems that are getting 98% accuracy.
So you've been at this for a while. I mean, how does it make you feel the progress now is becoming exponential?
The exponential word is a dangerous one because it tends to suggest that things will continue to accelerate without end, but it may turn out that it will plateau and that for other tasks we need new breakthroughs.
Quantum computing,
possibly, but that's kind of a cheat in some sense. That says that rather than really understand how the brain manages to do these amazing tasks with what is really not that much hardware. And so I almost hope that quantum computing
doesn't happen
or happens a long time in the future, where give us a chance to keep working on finding the sort of the secrets of intelligence, the things that make us smart, and gain real understanding. Because just brute forcing it isn't really understanding what's going on.
quantum computing may be the next giant leap in building the artificial intelligence of the future. It's a technology so powerful that we really could use it to develop AI without having to understand how human learning works. And though Stuart Russell hopes that quantum computing won't happen for a long time, Rupak Biswas can't wait. And he isn't. He runs the Quantum Artificial Intelligence Lab at NASA's Ames Research Center, where scientists are working on a powerful experimental computer called the D-Wave.
The actual mathematics is done by very high-speed counting performed by the computer's electronic circuitry. The speeds go beyond 50,000 operations a second.
The paper predicts that everything will start positively. Revolutions happen in energy, infrastructure, and science. Hugely profitable inventions are launched, making trillions for OpenBrain and the US. In the scenario, Agent 5 begins basically running the US government. It speaks through engaging avatars, the equivalent to the best employee ever, working at 100 times speed.
The anger here is palpable as protesters march against OpenBrain.
Protests about job losses pick up pace, but the AI's expertise in economics means people are given generous universal income payments. So most happily take the money and let the AIs and the growing robot workforce take charge. The researchers predict that everything takes a turn in mid-2028. Agent 5 convinces the US that China is using DeepSend to build terrifying new weapons. The AI is given authority and autonomy to create a superior army. Within 6 months, the US and China are bristling with new weapons. The world is on edge. But a peace deal will be reached, thanks mostly to the US and Chinese AIs, making a deal to merge for humanity's betterment. In the scenario, the AIs form a consensus model, but its secret goal is to expand and gain knowledge.
Is that right?
Yes, it's falsch. Also einfach weil, also gerne die deutsche Antwort auf OpenAI.
That's wrong. You could say Germany's answer to OpenAI. But ChatGPT is a product aimed at the consumer. It's really intended to help school kids do their homework or to write a poem for grandma's birthday and things like that. That's not our target group at all. We want to go where the most complex and critical processes are.